My pleasure to welcome you this morning to this lecture. Did anybody have trouble getting up this morning? Okay, well, I'm going to tell you one thing for sure. Anybody had trouble getting up? You didn't have nearly as tough time last night as our speaker this morning. Our speaker, Peter Jacob, came in from Washington last night. We're very pleased to have him here. Lots of flooding going on the East Coast, and Peter arrived at 3 o'clock in the morning. So we're delighted to have you here, Peter. We're glad you made it, and looking forward to a great lecture. Peter Jacob is the chairman of the Aeronautics Division at the Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C. So he has a very, very cool job. He has curated a number of shows at the Smithsonian, including one that's just about to close in the next couple of weeks, I think it is, open in 2003. And it's one of the biggest Wright Brother exhibitions that has ever been put together. It was put together in 2003 to coincide with the year 100th anniversary of the very first flight at Kitty Hawk. And of course, we're celebrating Albert Einstein's miracle year of 1905 and the things that were going on around that time. So that's, of course, why we're talking about the Wright brothers. Mr. Jacob is indeed an expert on that subject, as well as his work at the Smithsonian. He's written a number of books, including Visions of a Flying Machine, The Wright Brothers and the Process of Invention, a book called The Published Writings of Wilbur and Orville Wright, and a book called The Wright Brothers and the Invention of the Aerial Age. We're delighted to welcome him to Perimeter Institute. Please welcome Peter Jacob.
No need to applaud. I haven't done anything yet. We'll leave that to the end if you think it's worth applauding. Well, good morning, everybody. As Michael said, I'm a little sleepy. Didn't get in here till not too long ago. So I'm going to rely on you to keep me awake and keep things excited so I don't fall asleep here on the podium here, because that would be very boring for you and very embarrassing for me. So let's try to keep me awake with a little lively group here. Well, as Michael said, we are here this past week or two to talk about Albert Einstein and focus on Albert Einstein and his incredible achievements. Albert Einstein, of course, was one of the greatest scientific minds in human history. His ideas really changed the world and in a lot of ways created the modern world, the world that we live in today, the world that really affects you. And you know, we talk about these great people in history, men and women who came up with breakthrough ideas, and we focus on their achievements, and sometimes they're very complicated and very difficult to understand. You know, Einstein is very famous for his theory of relativity. Well, what's the theory of relativity? Boy, that's a pretty complicated idea and hard to explain. But what's really important about those people, and the reason that we focus on them and the reason that we highlight them, is because the things that they did, whether we understand them in great detail or not, their ideas and their creations change the world. They really affect the way we live in an everyday way. The way when you get up in the morning and how you start your day and how you go through your day, the things that people like this do help shape that world. And what we're trying to do this week with this festival is look at how the modern world, basically our world, was shaped by Einstein and some others that were working in this period. Now, 1905 and the early part of the 20th century, about 100 years ago, really was an incredible period because there was a lot of things going on that were changing the world. This is the beginning of motion pictures. You know, we all go to the movies. We love the movies. How can we think about our lives without the entertainment of the movies? Those began in this time period. Radio, commercial radio, begins in this period. How would we, you know, think about communicating without the radio? And then, of course, later on, the development of television. But in this period, we have the beginnings of radio. Even in the artistic world, the modern art movement begins in this time period. You've probably heard of great names like Picasso and some of the great artists that were changing the way art was perceived and pursued in this time period. So this very early time period was a very rich one that really created the world we live in. And that's part of the reason why we want to look at it. And one of the other really, 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 really important things that happened in this time period was the invention of the airplane. The airplane really changed the world in a very powerful and dramatic way. And not just because We were able to get on a plane and fly from point to point. But it it changed the way that we do business. It changed the way that we communicate. It changed the way populations migrated and moved. It, of course, had tremendous impact on the military and how conflicts are pursued. So the creation of the airplane in many, many powerful ways shaped the modern world. And in fact, I would argue, of course, I'm a little prejudiced because I work in an air and space museum, but I would argue that the airplane is probably one of the most important inventions, if not the most important invention of the 20th century. I think 500 years from now, when there's a guy like me standing up here talking about what were the great things in the 20th century, in the last 100 years, I think the airplane will probably be at the top of that list because it really did shape the way we live and work and think and how our culture is. So it's really, really powerful invention. And so this morning, what I'm going to do is talk to you a little bit about how that happened. So we're going to start with two of my favorite people. Does anybody know who those characters are up on the wall there? How about you, young man? The Wright brothers. You're a very smart young man, so you get a prize. Congratulations, young man. Smart man. The Wright brothers. That's right. The fellow on the left there is Wilbur Wright. Fellow on the right is Orville Wright. And they were two brothers. They grew up in a place in the United States called Dayton, Ohio, in the Midwest of the United States. And they were probably not people that you would have thought, oh, they're brilliant. They're going to do great things. When they were young men, they were fairly ordinary. Their parents were very interesting people. Their father was a minister, was a traveling minister. But he was a very progressive fellow. He believed in education, he believed in inquisitiveness, and he encouraged all of his children. And there were several other Wright brothers. There were five children that grew to adults in the Wright family, two older brothers and a younger sister. And their father encouraged them to be very inquisitive and pursue their studies and read and think and follow whatever moved them. Their mother was also quite an extraordinary woman. And interestingly, she was the source of their technical skill, you know, the kind of stereotypical ideas that, you know, men are good with tools and women are good with other things, sewing or cooking and so forth. Well, that's not really true. Men and women can do all different kinds of things. And that's the case with the Wright brothers. Their father, he couldn't hammer in a nail straight. He wasn't very talented in that way at all. Their mother was very skilled with tools. Her father was a carriage maker, and as a little girl, she worked in his shop or played in his shop and learned how to use tools and gained those skills. So when the boys were growing up in the house, she would make toys for them and fix things in the household, and if ever something needed to be fixed, they would always go to their mother. They wouldn't go to their father because they knew they weren't going to get very far with him. So they had very, very interesting parents, and they grew up in a setting that fostered creativity. Yet they really had some problems when they were young people. The older brother, Wilbur, he was thinking about going to college and following in his father's footsteps as a minister. But he had a little accident. He was playing an ice hockey kind of game, and I know I'm in the land of hockey up here. It's much more popular here than it is in the United States, I think. So you all, I'm sure, can relate to that. And he got hit in the face with a stick, and he had some injuries and some complications from that. And he sort of kind of, to use a modern term, he dropped out of society, so to speak. He dropped his plans from going to college. He kind of became very quiet and reclusive. He stayed to himself and so forth and really kind of lost his direction. The younger brother, Orville, he was a very energetic guy, and he would be always taking things apart and working on things. So he seemed to be kind of the budding inventor. And he was interested in printing. He wanted to be a printer as a young man. And he designed and built a number of printing presses and even started a couple of newspapers in his hometown there, small little local newspapers. And But he didn't really seem to have much direction. He just kind of liked to pursue things that interested him, but didn't really have kind of a career direction. So if you were the parents of Wilbur and Orville Wright, living next door to them when they were coming of age in about the 1880s in Dayton, Ohio, you probably would have said, oh boy, I feel sorry for those Mr. and Mrs. Wright. Their kids, they're just not going anywhere fast. They really don't seem to have much motivation and so forth. But it was right around that time that Wilbur started to come out of his problems and teamed up with his brother, and they became a very, very great team. They were able to bounce ideas off one another and work very well together, and it was in that time period that this relationship that produced the airplane was really forged. Okay, now, the Wright brothers just didn't sort of decide one day, we're going to build an airplane and go do it. They are very famous for doing something else before airplanes. Anybody know what that is? How about you, young man, right there? Bicycles. Oh, boy, this is a really smart kid. You're going to force me to run all the way up here today, I think, because you're a lot smarter than me. Good for you. Bicycles, that's right. The Wright brothers were bicycle makers. And the bicycles are kind of an interesting part to the story. You would think, well, okay, what do bicycles have to do with airplanes? Well, when you're flying an airplane, one of the things you have to do is you have to balance the thing, right? You got to be able to keep your wings level, and you got to stay level and balance and so forth and keep level. What do you have to do with bicycles? You have to balance them, right? You got to keep that bicycle steady so you don't tip over. Well, the Wright brothers were able to think very creatively about balancing airplanes and other aspects, streamlining and other kinds of things based on their experience with bicycles. So bicycles are very important to their work. And that's an important idea to think about, because when you're in school or doing programs like this and you're thinking, well, this is a subject that doesn't have any relevance to my life. What do I need to know this about? But what you do find is that learning is very broad and very useful in ways that you could never imagine. When you're studying a subject, you might think, well, what does this have to relate to anything else? But then you'll see, if you're creative, you can use those ideas in other ways. And that's one of the lessons that we have from the Wright brothers. They learned how to fly using some of the skills that they had learned from becoming very good bicycle makers. Okay. Now, just about 1898, 1899, the Wright brothers decided they were going to work on airplanes. And they didn't think that they were going to be the ones to invent the airplane. They didn't think, oh, okay, well, we're going to become famous and build airplanes and change the world. They thought, well, this is an interesting idea. Why don't we try to work on it a little bit? Maybe we can add something to it, and someone else will be able to build on that, and then maybe someday airplanes will be a reality. And that's precisely what they did. So when you approach an idea like that, the first thing you want to do is to figure out, what did everybody else do? You need to find a starting point, right? You can't just kind of go with a blank slate. You need to figure out what was going on if you're going to be successful. So the Wright brothers wrote to a place called the Smithsonian Institution. The Smithsonian Institution is where I work in Washington, D.C., and it's a big complex of museums. We have all kinds of displays and artifacts, and we have all kinds of scientists and technical people. We do all kinds of research and so forth. And back in the days of the Wright brothers, the Smithsonian Institution was one of the biggest scientific research centers in the United States. It was sort of the place to do science. So they wrote a letter to the Smithsonian Institution asking for everything that we knew about flight. And the Smithsonian wrote back and gave them some suggestions on things they could read and ideas that they could pursue. And that's where the Wright brothers started. So they built the foundation. They said, okay, we have this problem, and we need to figure out what everybody else did. Okay, that's what they do. Now, if you're going to build an airplane, there are three big problems you need to solve. Anybody have any idea what those might be? How about you, way in the back? Yep. Okay, what do you need to do to deal with gravity? How about you right there in the white shirt? Okay, well, you answered a different question, but you got the right answer. That's one of the things. Engine, need a power, okay? So you get a prize because you figured out, just like the Wright brothers, one of the most important problems with flying. Okay, power, engine. You need some way to make this machine go. All right, that's one. What is another problem that we have to solve? How about you? Way, way in the back. Last one. Red shirt. Balance. Excellent. That's the hardest one. So you really deserve a prize. And now I got to run all the way up there. And I'm tired. Okay. Excellent. Balance. It's very important to balance. And what that really means is you need to be able to control your airplane. You need to be able to keep it in the air. You need to go where you want to go, keep it from crashing. So power, an engine, balance. What's the third one? What do you think the third one is? Oh, you got a lab coat. You must be really smart. What do you think the third one is?
Lifting.
Excellent. Let me see your hat. That's a pretty nifty hat there. How about that? How do I look in the hat? Okay. Now I look like Albert Einstein with his bowler hat. Okay. Mind if I borrow your hat for a little bit? I promise to give it back to you. Okay. My colleague from the Smithsonian, she just left. She would die to see me wearing this hat. Okay. Now, power, control, and lift. The three basic problems that you need to solve with an airplane. Okay. Oops. Ooh. Okay. This guy right here, very important guy in the history of flight, his name is Otto Lilienthal. And Otto Lilienthal was an engineer. He made steam engines and other kinds of things. And he got very interested in flight. And he is, just before the Wright brothers, he was working on flight. And he figured that there were these three basic problems: lift, propulsion, and control. And he said, well, I'm not going to worry about engines right now. I'm not going to worry about power right now. I want to see if I can figure out how to basically build a plane and control it. So what he did, he built a series of gliders. And what's a glider? Young lady right there. Okay, without an engine, right? There's no motor. There's no power. Good. Whoop. Here you go. Good answer. Okay, a glider. And you look at Otto up there flying in his glider. And he jumped off his little perch there and was trying to fly his glider. But he was really trying to figure out how to control it. And the way he controlled his glider was by shifting his legs. See his legs hanging down from there? If he wanted to go to this direction, he would swing his legs over here and get his weight that way. If he wanted to go that way, he'd swing his legs that way, and balance that way, front and back. And while that worked okay, and Otto made some glides, there's a big problem with that. Because how much does a human being weigh? Just like me. I'm an adult guy. What do I weigh? You know, 200 kilograms, something like that? Big fat guy? Nah. Otto was a big guy. He weighed pretty close to 200 kilograms, actually. He was a big guy. Very tall. And even if you were that big, wouldn't be a very good way to control an airplane, because the weight of the pilot has to be pretty close to the weight of the whole airplane if by shifting the legs or the weight was going to have any effect, right? You have something which is called the center of gravity. And the center of gravity is the place where everything balances around. And if you move that center of gravity to the one side, it's going to change things. If you move it to the other side, it's going to change things. And forward like this, and backward like that. So moving the center of gravity shifts the airplane around. So if you move your weight, you'll shift the center of gravity. But if you were going to fly like a jet airliner that you fly around in yourselves, that's a pretty big craft. And just even a 200-kilogram person or a 500-kilogram person, shifting their legs from the side, that's not going to do anything for a big plane like that. And the Wright brothers realized that was a problem. So they said, okay, What do we do? What do we do? What do we do? If we can't fly an airplane by shifting our weight, what do? We do something aerodynamically. We do something that has nothing to do with the weight. Because that way, the plane can be as big as we want, and it'll still be able to be controlled, because we're doing it by changing the aerodynamics, or the way that the wind or the air flows over the airplane, and how that affects how it moves and how it flies. So what they did, they said, okay, we're going to come up with an idea of how to do that. And what they did is they built this thing. Now, this is a drawing of the first thing that they built. What do you think that is? How about you right there in the blue sweater? Yeah. Kite. Excellent. Excellent. You saw that just from the drawing. This is a really smart group. No wrong answers yet. Excellent. Okay. That's a kite. And what they did, they built this little kite. It was only about, a meter and a half long. And they used it to figure out how to fly their glider. And if you look at that kite, you see the top part, you see the wings. Those lines are the wings, and they're straight. But if you look at the bottom part, see how they're twisted? See how the wings are twisted? You're looking at the end of it, and the wings are twisted? This is something that the Wright brothers called wing warping. They would literally warp the wings. Well, why did they do that? Okay, make believe I'm an airplane wing, all right? And I'm flying along like this, going along like this. If I turn the front edge of my wing up like that, it makes the airplane go up. It creates lift, or a vertical aerodynamic force that we call lift. So if you're going along like this, tilt it up, makes lift, goes up. Okay, now, let's say I'm coming along, but I only twist up one side, not both sides. I only twist up one side, which means I make more lift on this side than this side. What's going to happen? Plane's going to turn, right? So if I can control that difference in lift, I can balance the craft like this. Brilliant. So the Wright brothers built this little glider to test that out. It worked beautifully. All right. Don't need that one. Okay. Now, in 1900, just a few years before Einstein's famous year, the Wright brothers built their first full-size craft to test out this idea. And they built, like Otto Lilienthal, the German glider pioneer, they started with a glider without an engine to first test the aerodynamics and the controls of their craft. But they didn't do the weight shifting thing. They built this twisting of the wings, this aerodynamic method of control. Now, here is their first craft in the air. I said there's no motor. Okay, so there's no motor. There's no propeller. That's missing. See anything else missing in that picture? How about you in the white, way in the back? It's a little louder. Okay, that's a good observation. But what really important part is missing? How about you right there? The tail. Okay, well, I'm looking for something else. What does a plane need? How about you, dear, right there? A person, right, a pilot, right, to drive the thing. Excellent. All right. Good job. There's no pilot, but the plane is in the air. One of the things that the Wright brothers did that was really, really important was they came up with the modern idea of flight testing. And flight testing is a very, very important thing, because what that means is you test your airplane and you get certain information from testing it to improve it. You get data back from testing it to make a better airplane. Now, the Wright brothers figured this flying thing's a little bit dangerous. In fact, our good buddy Lilienthal, Otto Lilienthal, he got killed flying his glider, sadly. So the Wright brothers knew this was dangerous business. So what they did is they flew their gliders as a kite. If you look closely there, you see those strings coming off the thing. So they started out flying their full-size airplanes as kites to test them out. And then they would fly them like a kite with a pilot on board. And then eventually, they would fly them just a few feet off the ground. Let's see here. We can. Whoop. They would get the pilot on board like that, and they would have a helper on each end. They would just go a couple feet off the ground and try some tests and see what would happen. And very incrementally, step by step, they would test their airplanes, and they would learn how they were performing. And this way, they could get information without killing themselves, without hurting themselves. So flight testing was one of the most important things that the Wright brothers did. Now, they figured out this twisting of the wings to balance the airplane, and they started to build these gliders. And this is the second one that they built. Unfortunately, when these first gliders, although they flew, they didn't fly very well. The controls were working great. But the problem was they didn't generate as much lift. They weren't able to sustain themselves as well as they thought. Now, remember we looked back at this picture here. You see how a big angle that glider is at? See how it's not flying level like a normal airplane flies. It has a very, what we call, high angle of attack, meaning the angle that the plane attacks the oncoming flow of air, the angle that the plane is moving through the air. And because this glider didn't generate very much lift, it wasn't very good at generating lift, making lift, it had to be at a very high angle to keep itself in the air. That's the problem. So the Wright brothers decided to do a little research. It's a very slow projector here, so you have to be patient with me. And they figured, well, we need to figure out how these wings work. We got to learn more about this. We can't just, you know, make wings and try them and see what it's just too complicated, too costly to do that. So they decided they were going to make a whole bunch of little teeny tiny wings, about this big, different shapes, try to figure out which was the best one, which one would generate the most lift. You know, whenever you're flying a plane, you got two things that are always going on. You got lift, which is keeping you up, and you got something called drag, which is the resistance of the plane going through the air. And if you're going through air, you know, like if you're riding in your car and you put your hand out, right, you feel resistance on it. That's what's called drag. So what you want to have is you want to have the most lift and the least drag for the plane to fly well. Well, these early gliders had too much drag and not enough lift. So they built these little tiny wings, and if you look closely at that picture, you see a bicycle. Well, okay, Wright brothers had bicycles around, being bicycle makers. So they made this little instrument, and they put that wheel on the top. They put a bicycle wheel on the top. If you look closely, you see a little sort of rectangular shape on one side of that wheel and another one on the left side of the wheel there, these two little shapes. And what they did is they made a little tiny wing on one side and a flat plate on the other. They would pedal this bicycle like mad down the streets of Dayton to get air going over these little shapes. And the little wing would generate some lift, and the wind hitting the flat plate would generate some drag, some resistance, and they would literally balance the amount of lift against the amount of drag to see how good these little wings were. Now, this bicycle, the idea was great, but the bicycle wasn't very efficient because they had couldn't keep a nice steady flow of air and so forth, so they built something called the wind tunnel. And that's their wind tunnel. Now, wind tunnel is simply that. It's a tunnel. It's a narrow tube with an artificially generated flow of air. You know, if you're flying in an airplane and you've got a motor, if you move like this with the airplane through still air, the air flows over the wing. So you get air flowing over the wing. But if you just have the plane stationary and you blow air over the wing, you see the wing doesn't know the difference. The wing doesn't know if it's moving or if the air is moving over it. So what you can do with this tool is you can simulate what flying is like. You can make it appear as the way flight really happens by having a stationary wing and having an artificial flow of air go over it. So the Wright brothers had a fan on the right side of that picture, and they put the little model wings inside the tunnel itself there. And there's a little picture of the instrument. That little tiny thing at the top there is the wing. It's only about this big, very small. And they would have the flow going over, and they were able to test lots of different things. Now, this is very important because, remember I said, you know, the Wright brothers really changed the world with their airplane. And what's so important about what they did is not only were they the first ones to get a plane off the ground, but they were the first ones to really figure out how to design airplanes. They were the first aeronautical engineers. And most important to that was their idea of using the wind tunnel like this, making these little small shapes and testing all different kinds of things. And even today, modern engineers still use wind tunnels to research wing shapes and understand aerodynamics. It's more complicated now. There's lots more things going on. But the basic idea of using a wind tunnel in this way starts with the Wright brothers. So they really did create the foundation of how all airplanes were built after theirs, not just building their own. And the wind tunnel is very important. Okay. Let's go a little through here. Now, in 1902, they built their third airplane, their third glider. And here again, good flight test engineers. They would test it as a kite first. You can see that's the brothers there flying it as a kite, testing it out. And you'll notice something very interesting about this airplane. Remember how I showed you the earlier one, and it was up at a real big angle because it didn't have very good lift. Do you see anything different on this one? How about you, right there? Say real loud. It's level. Excellent. Good eyes. Okay, it's level. It means it has a lot of lift and very little drag, which is what we want in airplanes, because it's much more comfortable to fly when they're level than it is to fly when they're at a big angle. So this is a really great picture, because this shows not only how the Wright brothers tested their aircraft, but it also showed the improvement in their design. And a moment ago, someone answered very smartly that earlier plane didn't have a tail. Well, if you look at this one, look on the right-hand side, you'll see it has a tail now. The Wright brothers added a movable tail to complete their control system. Now they were able to not only balance the wings, they were able to turn the plane. And that strange little thing on the front is something called an elevator. And that was what allowed them to go up and down. On modern planes, we have the elevator in the back, both the rudder and the elevator in the back. But on these early ones, it was in the front. And just like the wing doesn't know if it's moving or if the air is moving over it, the airplane doesn't know if the elevator is in the front or in the back. It can't tell. All it knows is where the aerodynamics are operating from. So with this airplane in 1902, we've got all the aerodynamics figured out, the lifting stuff, right, number one problem. We've got our controls figured out, our balancing. We figured out the number two problem. All that was left was to figure out how to put an engine on it. Okay. And there's a nice picture of the glider. They're testing it. You can see the pilot laying on the glider right there. And there you see a beautiful picture of, that's Wilbur Wright flying the glider. And by this point, you know, remember at the beginning I said, well, these guys, they weren't going to invent the airplane. They just thought, well, we'd try to add a little ideas and see if we could solve the problem, or add to the solution of the problem. But by this time, they actually knew they were going to invent the airplane. They had solved all these critical problems, and they had a beautiful glider. Look how pretty that is. Very graceful-looking craft. And they were sure that they were going to be able to solve this problem. All they had to do was add propulsion. There's another nice picture of it flying in the air. Okay, now, somebody mentioned an engine before. Is the engine that is the only thing that we need to propel an airplane? How about you, right there, the blonde, right guy, you. Okay. Well, he answered my question, but you don't get a prize for just saying no. All right, what else do we need? How about you, dear, right there? Propeller, excellent, excellent. There isn't even a picture of it up there. Whoop. Excellent. Ooh, we dropped our plane. Here we go. A propeller. Well, the Wright brothers needed a propeller, and they thought, okay, well, what else uses propellers? Ah, ships use propellers, right? When a ship is going in the water, it's got a propeller in the back, and it pushes it along. So they thought, no problem. We'll just go see what people who make ships do and figure out how to make propellers from them. Well, they realized that wasn't going to work, because the way a propeller on a ship works is very different than the way it works on an airplane. Wright brothers had to come up with a more clever solution. Now, you remember earlier I talked about how wings, when they're flying along like this, air goes over them, they're flying along, and they create lift, so there's a force that goes lift, keeps in the air. The Wright brothers thought, what can we do with that idea? And they thought, okay, well, if we take a wing and we turn it on its side, okay, turn it sideways, and we spin it, okay, we spin it in this around and around and around to generate the flow of air over it. Remember I told you the wings don't know if they're moving or if the air is moving over them. So if you turn a wing on its side and you spin it around to get the flow going over it, what's going to happen? You're going to get the same lift force as you did when the wing was like this, but now you're going to get a lift force in a horizontal direction. And we call that thrust. And that's what moves an airplane along. So the Wright brothers came up with this very elegant idea of a propeller as just simply a rotary wing, as a wing turning in circles. And every propeller on an airplane after that is based on that idea. So this was a very creative and ingenious idea. So the Wright brothers built this engine. You see the small engine on their airplane. And in those days, another thing that was happening at that time period that changed the modern world was the invention of the automobile. An important part of the automobile was the creation of the gasoline engine, what's called the internal combustion gasoline engine, which is, in basic terms, still the kind of motor that powers our cars today, gasoline engines. So they built this small engine, but the really important part was the propeller. Okay, that's more. And if you look closely, the Wright brothers had not one, but two propellers on their airplane. If you look at that airplane, you see those two black lines at the back there, kind of horizontal lines. Those are the two propellers. And they had those linked to the engine with a chain and a sprocket, just like on your bicycle, right? On your bicycle, you've got like a big gear, which we call a sprocket, on the wheel, and one on the pedals, and there's a chain that connects them. So it's called a chain and sprocket, and that drives the wheel. So what the Wright brothers did was simply put a sprocket on their motor and a sprocket on their propeller with a chain, and that would drive the propeller. And they had two of them to generate as much thrust as possible. And in 1903, they were now ready to fly. They had all the lift problems solved. They had the control problem solved. And now they had the propulsion problem solved. So we go back to the beginning and we said, okay, we're going to try to solve a problem. The first thing we do, we figure out what everybody else did. You know, they figured out what Otto Lilienthal had done and got some ideas from him. They identified what the problem was. Okay, we've got to solve these three pieces. And every one of those pieces needs to be solved. We can't just solve one and think we're going to be successful. All the pieces have to be solved. So one by one, they went through them. And by 1903, they were ready to fly their airplane. And this is a close-up shot of the airplane. You can see that's Wilbur, right? He's laying on there, the pilot. One of the things that they did was to lay down on the plane rather than sit on the plane. Anybody have any idea why they might want to do that? How about you? More aerodynamic, which means less drag, exactly. Good job. I don't have to run too far. Less drag. So the Wright brothers recognized that one of the important things about airplanes was that they had to be streamlined or produce as least drag as possible so they would have as much lift as possible. So they laid down on their airplane to get less wind resistance rather than sitting up straight on their airplane. Okay, on December 17th, 1903, it's a little over 100 years ago, the world changed. The world that we live in today began in large measure at that moment. 10:35 a.m., December 17, 1903, off the Atlantic coast of the United States in a place called Kitty Hawk, North Carolina, the Wright brothers made the world's first powered airplane flight. Now, that's Orville on the airplane. Very democratic way of figuring out who was to get to be the first one to fly. They flipped a coin. And actually, the older brother, Orville, won the toss, and he made the first attempt a couple days earlier, had a little problem, broke the plane a little bit. They patched it up. 3 days later, on the 17th of December, now it was Orville's turn. He got on board and lifted off, and they had a camera set up and made a photograph of the moment that the aerial age began, the world of airplanes, the world of flight began. And they were successful. They made only four flights in this airplane. The best one that they made was just under a minute, only 59 seconds long, but it was a true flight, and it proved that their ideas were good. They went on to refine their airplane in 1904 and 1905, and exactly 100 years ago this month, on October 5th, 1905, right about the time where Einstein was coming up with his great ideas, the Wright brothers made a flight in their airplane that lasted 40 minutes, almost 40 minutes. So clearly, by then, they had a truly practical airplane. They had solved all the problems. They had an airplane that could fly as long as the fuel supply lasted. And every airplane that flies since that time is based on the principles of the Wright brothers' airplane. Now, of course, we use jet engines today in some of our airplanes as opposed to propellers, but still the propulsion system is the key element. We still control our airplanes the same way by balancing aerodynamically. We still have the same principles of lift. Propellers on propeller airplanes are the same. Every airplane comes out of that airplane, and that's why this particular airplane and the Wright brothers are so important. Now, what did we learn today? We've learned that you don't have to be a wealthy person. You don't have to be part of a big organization. You don't have to be somehow so incredibly brilliant that ideas just come to you. We learned that individuals can change the world. If you have an idea and you have enough persistence and you have the drive to learn everything you can about how to solve your problem, you can change the world. And the Wright brothers did this all on their own. They were able to pay for their experiments out of the proceeds of their bicycle shop. The money they made selling bicycles, they used to build the airplane. They didn't have some, you know, multi-million dollar sponsor funding them. They didn't have a big research organization surrounding them. They had their idea, and they worked, and they were able to do something that changed the world. And every one of you can do that, too. Maybe 50 years from now, there'll be somebody like me from the Smithsonian Institution talking about some great invention that one of you created. And it's totally possible. You don't have to think that if you have an idea that seems a little bit strange, that it can't happen and it can't change the world. So that's the lesson of the Wright brothers, and that's one of the reasons why we're here studying people like Einstein and Henry Ford and the Wright brothers, because these are people who had an idea, who had a vision of the future, and they had the courage and the enthusiasm and the hard work to achieve that goal. So I appreciate you listening to me this morning, and I think we have time for a few questions if anybody would like to ask me them. And with that, I'm going to give this gentleman his hat back. Thank you, sir.
Excuse me. I'm just going to butt in for one sec. We do have microphones here so that everybody can hear the question. So can you just wait until the microphone comes down? Here comes one.
Were they perceived as sort of crazy inventors, or was it readily accepted in their time, like when they were presenting their ideas, and did they have to really overcome big obstacles to prove it or to, you know, have somebody else accept it?
Excellent question. That was such a good question. You get a prize, too. Prizes are just not for kids. We big kids get prizes, too. Were the Wright brothers seen as crazy, and was their idea readily accepted? When the Wright brothers started their work, a lot of people thought, you know, the famous phrase, if God intended humans to fly, he would have given them wings, and that flight for human beings was impossible, and anybody who pursued airplanes was, you know, a nutty person. Well, in the latter part of the 19th century, just before Einstein's time, you started to have people with professional reputations in engineering and science start to embrace the airplane. People like Lilienthal. Remember I said he was an engineer and he built steam engines, and he became well known for his skills as an engineer in other fields. More and more people like that started to pursue aviation, which gave credibility to the idea, which really started to give the impression that it's possible. And you noticed I had a picture of Otto Lilienthal flying. Well, the other thing that's going on in this time period that's a marker of the modern world is the appearance of pictures in newspapers and magazines. You know, today we look at newspapers and magazines. Can't imagine there was a time where there weren't photographs in those things, right? There was a time when that wasn't the case. But more and more people were seeing pictures of Otto Lilienthal flying. So it started to be seeming possible to fly. And this is the time that the Wright brothers get involved with aviation. Now, they do their work, and they invent the airplane, and they make their famous flights. And almost at the moment that the Wright brothers fly, just a few years later when they're demonstrating their airplane to the world, People really did know that the world changed. It was almost palpable. And again, this is a time period where a lot of things are happening like that. It was a very exciting time in technology. And people instantly knew that the airplane was going to change the world. It wasn't just people that were concerned with airplanes, but people in areas totally unrelated to that. Famous artists, I mentioned Picasso earlier. He was fascinated by flying. There were many artists in the modern art movement, the early period where modern art was evolving, who were very inspired by aviation and thought aviation was going to change the world. So, and military planners immediately saw that the airplane was something they could use. So the answer to the question is that when the Wright brothers started, yeah, a lot of people thought this was not the place you would go. If you were going to become an engineer, the first place you would work would not be aeronautics. This was not the field you would go into if you wanted to be successful. But by 10 years later, by 1905, by 1910, people saw that the airplane really was going to be a revolutionary invention. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
What materials did they use and why?
Okay, the question was, what materials did the Wright brothers use and why? Well, one of the most important things we have to figure out when we're building airplanes, and it's still true today when a modern engineer works, is to get that good amount of lift and low amount of drag, and good amount of lift with relationship to the amount of weight. Weight is the enemy of all aeronautical engineers, and the Wright brothers knew that. So they needed to build not only strong structures, but lightweight structures. And their bicycle experience helped them in that, because bicycles are very lightweight, strong structures, and they were able to use that experience with the airplane. So they built their airplane out of wood. The basic framework was out of wood, spruce and ash in particular. And then they covered it with a muslin fabric covering to create the skin over the framework. And that's what sealed the framework and enabled the air to go over it and to be able to rise. So they used wood and fabric to make it very light and as very strong a structure as possible. How about you, way in the back? Wait for the microphone so I can hear you. Oh, okay, we need a faster runner up there.
How old were they when they invented it?
Okay, how old were they when they invented it? The Wright brothers were 4 years apart. Wilbur was the older one. And in 1903, when they first fly, they were very young men. Wilbur was only 36 years old, which may seem old to you, young to me. And the younger brother, Orville, was 32 years old. So when they were in their early 30s, late 20s, early 30s, they did this research and really changed the world. And, you know, that's a pretty common thing in science and engineering. Einstein was a very young man in 1905 when he made his famous discoveries. And a lot of times people are most creative when they're younger. So it's not always the case that you have to be an older person to have wisdom and have great ideas. Young people can change the world with their own ideas. So they were 36 and 32. How are we doing on time?
Couple more questions.
Okay, a couple more questions. How about you right there?
For the first people who thought about airplanes, were there any inventions that gave them the idea about
okay. it? Okay. The question was basically, were there inventions that had given the idea to airplanes? Well, that's a kind of interesting question. So you're going to get a prize. Here you go. Ooh. Airplanes are interesting in that way because let's take a look at something like electricity, okay? Now, 1,000 years ago, people couldn't even imagine something like the computer or the television because there was no knowledge of electricity. The kinds of things that you would need to create some technologies weren't there. But airplanes are different. Thousands of years ago, people were thinking about flight because flight exists in nature, right? You have birds, you have flying insects, and so forth. And human beings were always interested in trying to emulate those creatures and coming up with ways to do that. So actually, the desire to fly is one of the oldest human dreams. But it's not until the time of the Wright brothers that this actually happens. And part of that has to do with the complexity of the airplane. In some ways, it looks like a very simple idea. You just have wings and you emulate a bird and so forth. But it's a very complicated machine in a lot of ways, and I didn't have time to really give you a lot of the real hardcore technical details of the invention. I was just giving you kind of overview. But it was in this time period, in the late 19th century, where very technically trained and very astute scientific people got interested in flight and gave it credibility. So some of the great minds now were pursuing flight and enabled the Wright brothers to use some of their ideas. We talked about Lilienthal, and there were others who had some basic information that the Wright brothers used. So it's kind of cuts both ways. It was a desire and an idea that lasted for many years, but it was really only in the last 100 years that we were really able to achieve it. Okay, one last question. How about you right there in the red and black? Wait for the microphone.
When was it possible for more than one person to fly the airplane?
Okay, when was it possible for more than one person to fly the airplane? That's another really good question. So we get one more prize, and you get to see me almost trip one more time. Here you go. The question was, when was it possible for more than one person to fly? That was another thing that was special about the Wright brothers. They were not interested in simply getting a machine that would get off the ground so they could become famous and be the first people to fly. They really were interested in designing an airplane that could become a practical airplane that could evolve into what we have today. Now, Lilienthal, you know, who was shifting his weight, his airplane, as successful as it was, could never become a modern airplane because, as I mentioned, this weight-shifting technique was a dead end. And that was the reason why the Wright brothers realized that they needed to do something aerodynamic, because they wanted to ultimately build an airplane that could carry not only the engine and the pilot, but passengers and payload. And that's why their airplane is so important. Now, the Wright brothers carry their first passenger in 1908. One of their mechanics was able to help them. And the second passenger that they took was their sister, Catherine, who in early 1909 made a brief flight with the Wright brothers. And by 1910, passengers were being carried routinely, one or two passengers on airplanes. But then it wasn't until into the First World War, after about 1915, that you started to see airplanes that were large enough that could carry a number of people. And then, of course, the technology evolved into where we today have just recently test flown this year, the A380, which can hold almost 600 passengers, a huge, huge airliner. So it evolves in that way. Okay, I really appreciate all your intention and all your great answers and questions, and you've been a wonderful group, and it's been my pleasure to chat with you, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the festival, and thanks a lot.
Now, just quickly before we let you go, how many of you really hoped for a prize and didn't get one? Okay, so here's what you got to do. You got to bug your mom and dad until they go buy you one at the concession stand at the exit out there.
Fundraising, I love it.
lots of great activities at Einstein Fest this weekend. Outside in our Physica Fantastica tent at the front, colleague of Peter's doing some great activities on physics of flight, and there's a flight simulator out there. You have to stop and check that out. You actually can get on the simulator and ride that first flight in 1903 that the Wright brothers took. At 1 o'clock this afternoon, we just talked just now about the birth of flight. At 1 o'clock, a concert on the birth of jazz. So if you're interested in that, go out to the ticket booth out front. And tomorrow, of course, all about Morse code. You can come back to the Physica Fantastica tent, Marconi wireless communication, and send each other Morse code messages. Again, Peter Jacob, thank you. It's been a great pleasure having you.
All right. Here we go. We got a couple more. Bye-bye.
Oh. Sorry, forgot one last announcement. The exit is only from the top at the right, please. So you're going up to the top out there. Thank you.